And what I will now do is pass over to the next session, which is Hans and Neely. And you will have seen that you have 40 slides in your pack. We are not going to go through those 40 slides today. They are for your information. However, there are a couple of questions that Neely has that she will ask for our feedback on a couple of those later on. But I'm going to start with Hans taking us through his chair's update.
Okay, thank you, Joanna. Over lunch, one of you said to me, Hans, it seems that you're going through a very quiet period, sort of implying that we are resting on our laurels and could just as well have a nice vacation. And of course, I got very upset, and I am going to tell you today why we are still very busy bees and working very hard. But I will tell you a little bit about what's happening behind the scenes when we are not so visible, and that's a lot. So I told you before about the IBER project in May, which is to look at the accounting implications of the reform to replace LIBOR with alternative rates, all sorts of problems emanating from that. And we have issued an ED in May and have discussed the feedback in August. We had, for the second time in our history, we had an August board meeting for a couple of hours. To speed things up because time is very urgent. So while instead of being on vacation, we came back to the office, at least most of us. Then in June, we produced amendments to IFRS 17. I've gone into more detail previously. The comment deadline is 25th of September. Our staff has been working very hard, is working hard to process all the feedback, and we also did more outreach. We had an event in London on the 20th of September. I think generally people are pretty happy with the changes that we proposed. Nevertheless, of course, there is still demands for further change. I think we could keep this running for a couple of more years. We will look at these issues soon, and we expect to still do a lot of work, although it is really time to bring this to a close. We had an annual conference in London in June. We discussed that previously with you, how we should position these conferences, and we decided only one big conference per year. We did one in London, quite well attended, 300 people from 50 countries, and it was a very lively event with very positive feedback. So I think we are on the right track with what to do with our conferences. And then in July, the board gave green light to the staff to draft three key consultation documents, PFS, goodwill and impairment, rate regulated activities. We'll give a little bit more detail later. But now I would really like to show you what happens in the meantime, in the period between decisions and the documents, because that's where a lot of time of the staff and the board is being consumed without it at all being visible to the outside world. So, first of all, the board completes its technical discussions, has completed all its decision-making, and then gives permission to ballot to the staff. Basically, that means that the staff is given permission to take all our decisions and try to make sense out of it and put it down in an exposure draft, either a discussion paper or a standard. The staff works, and that is, that is often very difficult work to go from a bit abstract decisions to the exact wording of the standard. Staff does that work, often takes a couple of months, bring it back to the board for review. Board makes comments, staff takes that on board, makes revisions. If there is something they cannot solve behind the scenes, then it will be brought back to the board as a sweep issue. And then the board votes on an updated document, that's the ballot phase, and then the document is finalized for publication post-ballot. So this whole process easily takes, well, how many months, nearly?
About 6 months.
6 months, yeah. And so this is the work behind the scenes. It's very intensive and actually, extremely important. So what is coming up next? In 2019, we will have a... let me first talk about PFS and goodwill and impairment. These will be published around the end of this year. Goodwill might shift a little bit into the next year. And we will be consulting as part of the comprehensive review of the IFRS for SMEs standards. Has not been changed for quite a while. A lot of standards have been produced in the meantime, and we have to see to what extent we have to update the IFRS for SMEs so that it at least stays more or less congruent with IFRS without, of course, being identical. So it will be quite busy in terms of, for you and for the outside world, for our stakeholders, who will have to look at all those documents and who will have to provide us, or not have to, but hopefully will provide us with good feedback, and I encourage you all to partake in this. Few words about these projects. Primary financial statements came up in the discussions today. Again, I really think an extremely important document, talking about providing more subtotals, providing more discipline around non-GAAP, and hopefully also resulting in a better level of disaggregation. And more insight in what are unusual and usual unusual items. I'm really curious what the feedback will be. Of course, we have been talking to people. I think we have reason to believe that the investor community will be enthusiastic about it. We have received a first concerned letter from a preparer organization that thinks that we might be boxing in non-GAAP measures a little bit too much. So let's see what this brings. But I also think that for companies, the improved structure of the income statement should also be a big step forward, not just for investors, but also for companies themselves. We'll see. Well, goodwill and impairment. I encourage you all to partake in this endless discussion, which does not have a good answer. So we are not looking for the perfect answer. It doesn't exist. We are looking for a workable answer. It might be just leave things as they are, for the very fact that there is no perfect answer. It might also be let's go for a more simple solution than the current impairment-only approach. We certainly hope that we will also be able to provide better disclosures to the investors. Might also enrich the whole impairment process. We have some proposals for that. We really encourage you to partake and to think creatively how to get out of this, because the present situation, it's not very satisfying. And then finally, rate regulated activities, in itself an important standard for rate-regulated utility companies. It will not affect most of the world, but I think for these companies it will be an improvement that allows them to better explain their performance to investors. And we hope to publish an exposure draft in the first half of 2020. And I expect this consultation to have probably a soft landing in the sense that it will be welcomed. Let me stop here. Ready to accept any questions?
So are there any questions of Hans on those? One question, Garth Jones.
Yes, sorry, Hans. The goodwill, you said, is an issue. I just wondered what the major concern was, because I was surprised to see that that was such an issue.
It is an expensive exercise every year, and at the same time we feel that the recognition of impairment often comes too little too late. And not everybody, but there are quite a few people who are concerned about goodwill just building up and not being released or impaired sufficiently. And who knows what happens in a next downturn of the market. We might have massive impairments and everybody will look at us, where were you? And you already see that happening a little bit.
Hidetaki?
Well, I'm representing Japan's Business Federation, and my brief comment is that Japan as a whole is supporting a reintroduction of goodwill amortization. And I hope a good discussion and good solution. You could speak.
As I said, we are particularly looking for new insights, and this new sound from Japan is very welcome.
Just before I move on to Neely, I had one thing that you said there, Hans, in terms of it's not public information. When you shared the information about the timeliness, we don't have, I think I'm right in saying, we don't have the slides that you've just presented in our packs.
Yeah.
So,
oh, okay.
We Based haven't seen one.
There's nothing secret about it.
No, yeah. But so I'm only looking at what I saw there. My question, though, given the discussions that we have had around the timeliness issue and some of the criticism of the foundation is around the timeliness of getting accounting standards out. Why isn't that public information? And should we make it public?
Some of that is actually public. It's just not the easiest to find right now. So one of the pieces of advice that you had given us, I think it was about a year and a half ago, was to improve the communications around the timeliness, exactly what you're saying. And so we are working bit by bit to start doing that. Some of the things that we've done already on our website, you can start seeing more precise deadlines, and you can see why things shift when you look at some of the public papers. So it's there, but we are aware that we need to make it more prominent, and it's on the to-do list. So very good point.
Well, on that note, Neely, do you want to cover the items you want to cover?
Yep. All right. Thank you, Joanna. So I know I'm the last agenda item before drinks, so I will try to keep this as painless as possible. April has kindly prepared Agenda Paper 5, which is an update on the board's technical activities. And as Joanna mentioned, I won't take you through all 40 slides. I'll assume that you've been through it. I'm happy to take any questions, though, if you have any. The one specific item that I did want to focus on is on two of our research projects. This is on slides 29 to 37. We have two research projects, provisions and subsidiaries, that are SMEs, which are nearing completion. Staff will be coming to the board very shortly to discuss their research findings and to ask the board about whether the board would like us to initiate a standard-setting project. And what I was interested in is if you have any feedback or advice or comments on moving this to the standard-setting agenda. To give you a little bit of background, the provisions project is a very narrow project. It's not at all akin to an IS 37 project that we had several years ago. It's looking to potentially address three issues that we've talked to a number of stakeholders, and they're in agreement that there is a need for addressing these issues. One relates to revising the requirements for when to recognize provisions for conditional obligations. The second issue relates to the costs to include in obligations, so whether you include incremental costs or directly attributable costs or some variation there. And the third issue is about the discount rate for provisions, whether to include a company's own credit risk, which could become very material when you have longer-term liabilities like decommissioning liabilities. The second project is subsidiaries that are SMEs, and this is a project where the question is whether we can alleviate some of the disclosure burdens for companies that are subsidiaries of listed companies. So you might have a listed company that applies full IFRS. It has a subsidiary that is an SME and also has to prepare standalone financial statements. And today it might be applying full IFRS as well at that standalone level because that full IFRS gets consolidated into the listed company's financial statements. However, it is an SME. It isn't listed itself. It's not publicly accountable. And so is there some way that it could apply the recognition and measurement criteria within full IFRS, because that has to get consolidated into the parent, but disclose something that's less burdensome? So for example, following the disclosure requirements in IFRS for SMEs. With both of these projects, as I mentioned, the staff has done a significant amount of outreach, and there is support around the problems that have been identified and some of the solutions. And we'd be interested in any feedback that you might have on either of those about moving it to the standard setting agenda.
And perhaps just to confirm that one of the reasons that you're asking that question is actually it's an obligation in the due process handbook to ask us that question. So it's not encouragement to get involved in technical, but it is a requirement of the due process handbook. Yeah. James.
Thank you, Joanna. I'm glad you raised this one. I had a huge circle around it, and I will apologize for my ignorance because I didn't realize this research project was happening. I think my question was not necessarily to the technicalities, but rather, is the thought process at the moment to introduce a third set of standards on the same framework?
No, it would actually be the thinking, and again, this would have to go through the board. The thinking is that it would be part of IFRS standards, but it would be scoped, as an example, it could be scoped similar to IFRS 8, where the disclosure requirements apply only to certain types of entities. So it could be a standard that only applies to subsidiaries of listed companies that are also SMEs.
And have the staff by any chance considered whether there's a form of integration that could happen with the current revision for IFRS for SMEs as a potential solution?
Yeah, it is. The timing for these are actually coinciding intentionally because there is the pull between the two. And so one of the things that we're trying to think about as part of the request for information that the board is going to be putting out on the SME project is whether or not there's a need for, if the board decides to go through and align IFRS for SMEs, then what impact does that have on the subsidiaries project? And if there's a different decision, then also what impact that would have?
So James, I'm understanding from your comments, you're asking questions about understanding as opposed to saying you disagree with it being taken on as a project.
No, I don't disagree with it. I think there is I've heard the call myself for this, should we say, disclosure reduction. In my mind, I'm battling to see where this fits. I wouldn't want to create a third set of standards. That would be my preference. And if we could align it either into full IFRS or I think maybe into IFRS for SMEs, it would be difficult. We may find a solution in either of those two existing frameworks to meet this.
Andreas.
Thanks, Joanna. Two questions. First one is also with regard to the timeline. I know that tomorrow we will be discussing the agenda consultation that's coming up. And is there a potential that actually some of these projects, one or both of them, actually might overlap into 2022 and therefore biting into some resource planning that's already taking place? So my question would be as to, do you have any view as to when these projects might finish? And the other one, specifically to that one, is we are probably in a slightly peculiar situation because under national GAAP, we don't allow use of IFRS, neither for SMEs nor for anybody else. Entities would have to follow national GAAP. But it may be that they are submerged into a group where the parent has to do IFRSs. So then the question is, they obviously wouldn't be covered. If you wanted to accommodate that situation, it would necessarily lead to a third, probably a fourth system. And the question is, have staff looked into legal issues, quote unquote, because jurisdictions or regulators may actually say you can or you can't do this or that? So I understand the relief that you wanted to provide, and I think I would acknowledge that, but the question is, are there potential constraints coming from other parties that you don't control?
Thank you. So for the first question, the timing is a little bit difficult to predict. If we were to start the project immediately, I think realistically, if you think about how long it normally takes to issue a standard and or go through the consultation document and then the standard, I could see that eating up a little bit into the 2022 time period. These are smaller projects, so perhaps not as much as, say, something of the size of, you know, say 15, 16, or 17, but there is that potential, and certainly that potential would increase if we say, well, yes, we should move this to standard setting, but let's not start it immediately. Let's start it, you know, after some of the noise, or not the noise, but some of the stress of these other consultation documents have gone through the system. With respect to your second question, the staff has done some outreach to understand how this sort of a subsidiary that's for SMEs would work in various jurisdictions. And we do know that it actually won't be relevant for all jurisdictions. It could be the case that it's just another standard in there that's just ignored, or, you know, or sort of optionally applied. Now, whether there would actually be create a legal prohibition, I'm not sure about that. I'll have to go back to the team on that piece of it. But I think my initial thought is that I think it would just be a voluntary thing where you wouldn't have to pursue it.
So. I think the key message there is just in terms of as you progress, think right. about that. And yep. in particular, for those countries where it would apply, like New Zealand, mm-hmm. is it worthwhile doing it for just a few countries? If major countries, it wouldn't apply. Because it's irrelevant. Trevor, I had next. You've removed yours, so I will now go to Lothar.
Yes, I mean, with regard to the countries and jurisdictions where this rule on the SMEs would apply, I mean, if I understand correctly, you're saying the data is generated anyway because it has to be consolidated into the group reporting. So I don't know how much of a relief it would be. And then I was wondering, I mean, there are small caps, stock market listed small cap companies, but which are not SMEs. So when they split up in all kinds of subsidiaries, which are then SMEs, they can kind of sneak out of the reporting. Or, you know, even an SME can be relevant for the valuation of that small cap company. We're not only looking at, you know, global corporations, and that's a concern. I'm looking at a lot of small cap companies right now, so I'm just wondering if there could be a detriment there.
Perhaps just to again take that one into account as you're moving forward on this, Alain.
Thank you. I just want to take a jump back to everybody's favorite standard, which is IFRS 17. Just a specific issue on timing, which we're starting to worry about, is linked to the parallel application date with IFRS 9. Because IFRS 9, we've endorsed the amendments to IFRS 4, which differ by one year, and therefore, if the amendments that defer IFRS 9 for a further year are packaged up together with the amendments of IFRS 17, they may, especially if there's a delay compared to your timetable, that may give problems in terms of endorsement. So it'd be helpful if those could be either fast-tracked or that at least they are separable from the other amendments so that we can treat them separately. We don't have a problem with IFRS 17 since we haven't endorsed the original standard. We're only going to endorse everything together if and when that decision comes. But for IFRS 9, we have that specific concern. Thank you.
Yeah, we're aware of that. So.
I want to put it on a record.
Any other questions or comments? I think I've picked up everyone who put up their card. Okay, so that, I think I am right in saying, takes us to the end of our formal sessions for today. So I'd like to, unless anyone has anything else that they would like to say today, I draw our discussions to a conclusion. It is now 5:05. So yes, we are early, and I'll be honest and I'll say I'm actually quite pleased that our last sessions are as quick as they are, because it means we're focused on the strategic aspects of what we should be doing as the Advisory Council. However, it is now 5:05. We are scheduled to have drinks at 6:00. Because April suspected we would be early, drinks are actually now available from 5:30. Yeah, so you can do whatever you please until 5:30. Dinner is still 6:30.
Actually, no. Even as we speak, the IFRS pixies are trying to bring the drinks forward a bit. They definitely will be there at 5:30. We're hoping it might be a bit early. And dinner will be at 6:15, so please okay. Don't miss the beginning of dinner. We don't advise you, by the way, to leave your things here overnight, because it's not a secure site. So if I were you, I'd take your things away with you.
Okay, and April tells me drinks are out there and dinner is on this floor in the last breakout room. So whoever was in room 5, I think it is the last one. That is where dinner is at 6:15. So thank you very much for your contribution today, and we look forward to seeing you in here at 9:15 tomorrow morning. Thank you.